Welcome to episode 131 of Junk Filter. My name is Jesse Hawken, and my guest is a prolific podcaster and friend of the show, Cinema Smorgasbord's Doug Tilley. Doug, welcome to Junk Filter.
Thanks for having me. Very excited to talk about this very rich topic that we have today.
Well, I'm so happy to finally have you on my show. Mm-hmm. Among the many great podcasts you've given us, you provide a valuable service on your Twitter by giving us regular updates to what has been added to Tubi, what I call the people's streaming service.
I think some people might disagree with that that categorization of what Tubi is, but that's how I feel about it. It's it may not be the most curated, it might not be the most refined streaming service that's out there, but by God, it has a lot of junk on it. Mm-hmm.
Doug is our guide today to discuss the joys of Tubi, Pluto TV, and having access to giant libraries of content, where the only price that you pay is forced advertising during the movie or the show. I feel that this is the actual future of streaming, what the industry calls AVOD, video on demand, but with ads. And I think free services like Tubi and Pluto TV are restoring the balance of the universe in this period of corporate control of film libraries, even though Tubi is owned by a major corporation.
I mean, it seems to be moving in that direction. Even the big hitters have moved in that direction, having a lower cost tiers on things like Netflix that are ad supported. It seems like Tubi were sort of ahead of the game. And in fact, the company that originally started Tubi, AdRise, they initially, you know, they had a few services that were very similar, ad supported, a lot of low budget horror and cult movies on that. The fact that they were able to then refine that into something that has such a huge library that was then purchased and now has, you know, that mixture of very mainstream, high budget Hollywood content with literally things that are made in people's backyards on handycams, maybe not handycams, but on their phones and things like that. It has been very interesting to see that development over the past decade or so.
Well, it seems like this realignment of how things used to be.
Sure.
You and I, when we were young, if we wanted to watch all sorts of movies, we had basically two choices. We had the video store, or we had commercial television, and we were used to seeing movies with ad breaks. And in fact, one thing that I do like about Tubi, beyond the fact that the picture quality is much better than the sort of telecine transfers that we used to get on TV, which, by the way, I should mention that sometimes the movies that are on Tubi are telecine transfers. The ad breaks on commercial television were like at least 3 minutes, sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 7 minutes, whereas on Tubi, the interruptions are minimal compared to what we grew up with.
Though if you might have to see the same toilet paper commercial 20 times when you're trying to watch a film. Hey, there's trade-offs in regards to it, but you're exactly right. We have shared friends who have a lot of nostalgia and enthusiasm for the 1980s, the 1990s, and that era of mom and pop video stores. And so do I. Tons of nostalgia for it. But some of them also carry a nostalgia for those formats. And that's something I don't have any strong positive feelings about how long VHS stuck around and seeing these kind of compromised versions of films, which again, on Tubi, you will still see films shown in there not in their correct aspect ratios. You will see movies that are dubbed instead of subbed. You'll see cut versions of movies sometimes. It is very much a crapshoot in terms of the content that you're going to find on there. That in some ways is also part of the fun. It feels less like someone has been, you know, carefully putting that material on there. And I guess that is a little unfair when it comes to certain filmmakers, but it also is a little exciting because sometimes you'll see things that you would just never see on a standard streaming platform, something like a Netflix.
You know, in the last 20 or so years, cord cutting of cable has increased. And now what we're seeing is the number of streaming services increasing, most of which are controlled by certain corporations and or film studios. There was a time where, you know, commercial television, you would see all kinds of movies from all kinds of places and all kinds of times. Now, catalogs are confined by the library ownership. So all the Disney stuff is on Disney Plus. MGM stuff is on Amazon. All the Warner Brothers stuff is over at HBO Max. And of course, we'll be talking about their name change this week. Netflix was more democratic than most because it showed all kinds of movies from all kinds of studios. Now they don't have access to as much. So what we wound up happening is that people have cut cable. Now they're not paying however much money they're paying per month for cable, but that's starting to add up with all the streaming services, the a la carte purchases. Like you could actually technically now be paying more for what you used to pay for cable if you're subscribing to Prime, Netflix, Criterion, Disney. Tubi is sort of like, for me, a way of sort of realigning the balance of nature because it's returned what was good about cable television and what was good about programming. When things like Netflix and Prime, you're your own programmer. You're practically your own projectionist because you have to line everything up and, you know, decide what you want to watch. One thing that was great about channels like City TV and Channel 47 and TV Ontario was that they put stuff on for you to watch. And it was chosen and curated. Like there were people, obviously, who worked at City in the great movies department that were programming specific titles that they wanted people to see from these gigantic libraries. And Tubi, you still have to do your own searching and rooting around, but the level of access of library content is staggering.
I think the searching and rooting around part is actually an integral part of what you're talking about. Because the fact is, we live in an era where you never have to watch something that you haven't been recommended, right? You never have to watch something that isn't, quote unquote, good. When the pandemic was at its height, you heard of people who were just watching The Office, you know, reruns of The Office every single day on Netflix because it was comfortable. It was something that was familiar to them. But I think that there are many people who stick with the material that's very familiar to them because they don't have to move outside of that. The requirement when you go on Tubi, yeah, you can go in and there are certain curated sections of that. But the funny thing about Tubi is when you go into like recommended or you go into trending, you will see that exact mix that you were saying, which is that you will see RoboCop and you'll see like the Michael Mann film Public Enemies. And right next to it, you will see a spaghetti Western or a sword and sandal movie or a 1980s schlock horror movie. It's all on the same, you know, it's all treated as being on the same level with some reservations in the sense that Tubi does push their more polished movies ahead of others when it comes to like what's recently added. But I mean, in terms of if you go into those sections and start poking around, you may just find something that just tickles your funny bone, or maybe it just it piques your interest and you can sample it. You can go in and check it out. It is the best of what the streaming age was supposed to give to us instead of walling off certain areas and saying, well, this is you. This is your Spotify recommended playlist. And this is all that you're going to be exposed to or going on Amazon now and not being exposed to their wide library, only having like 10, 15, 20 movies that they're just cycling around at any particular moment. With Tubi, you are inevitably going to run into things that you haven't seen or haven't heard of. And that's exciting. At least it's exciting to me.
I've also noticed in the last few years that the big three networks in the US have now established their own adjunct streaming services. Mm-hmm. So NBC has Peacock, which has tiered access. You can watch some stuff for free. You can pay to get access to more things and things like sports coverage. CBS has Paramount Plus, which used to be CBS All Access, and there are a couple of very good shows that CBS makes, but not for their main network, but for what is now called Paramount Plus. Like The Good Fight was very good and it was only available through that streaming service. And then ABC's got Hulu and Disney Plus. One thing that drives me crazy about the big three networks having their own streaming services is that they're not highlighting their rich catalog of historical television achievements. Peacock used to have Miami Vice on it. Now you can see Miami Vice on Tubi. Peacock, for some reason, carried Columbo, even though Columbo was on ABC. They carried the Rockford Files. You know, like these are shows that I think during the pandemic, people were discovering how good shows like Columbo and the Rockford Files were.
Sure.
I feel that the free streaming services like Tubi and Peacock probably saved a lot of brains during the pandemic because people were trapped in their homes and discovered how great the Rockford Files was in Columbo. And the numbers don't lie. Tubi in the year 2014, they started broadcasting as Tubi TV with 20,000 films and TV shows available. In 2015, they struck major deals with Paramount, MGM, and Lionsgate to acquire more content. And so a year after they launched, they had 50,000 titles. The usage of Tubi has been booming exponentially in the last 9 years. In January 2021, they had 33 million monthly active users. By January 2023, that number had doubled to 64 million. regular users. And the pandemic, I think, led a lot of people to services like Tubi. What else are you going to do when you're trapped in your house and you have no money?
It's the odd thing about Tubi specifically is the way that it's managed to cultivate still feeling like a bit of a secret, despite the fact that its numbers are so absolutely massive. When I started putting together these lists of recently added content to Tubi, you know, I would do it monthly, and I mean, we're both Canadian, but I was focusing on the American aspect of it because it's easy enough to access it via that way. And because it was a little bit more diverse at that time. The fact is, it isn't like another streaming service or like very popular ones like Netflix, where it's the Canadian version just gets less than the American one. They get different things, which actually makes it interesting on its own right. But the fact is, Tubi at that time, it felt like it was informational. It was like, here's what's on this service that you probably have not even heard of. But then you watch the Super Bowl this year and they have a Tubi commercial during it. And it, you realize that this is actually, it's something so massive that it almost advertises itself. And you were right. The pandemic, I think, was a big part of that. People know about the service mostly, I think, because it's free and it's built into a lot of the things that they already have. Whether you have your Fire TV or your Roku or your smart TV, you pick it up, you buy it, and you're like, well, I guess I'll install the Netflix app. I guess I'll install the Amazon app. But what's already built in here? What can I watch for free when I don't have anything on that? And Tubi gives you such a menu that you never have to get sick of it. And it's just constantly adding. And as you were just mentioning, and maybe this is key, there's a lot of adding. And though when it comes to a lot of like the very well-known stuff, there's also taking away, adding. Some of that underneath stuff, it just seems like it's there for good. It's not like what we've recently seen with the Disney streaming service where, I mean, maybe this, I mean, with the recent WGA strike and residuals and how that's going to play out, who knows how that's going to change things in the future. But one of the great things about Tubi is that you can feel pretty confident that that obscure movie from the 1970s that was there last month will be there next month as well.
Yeah. Like Tubi's not going to suddenly pull a movie like Lady Ice with Donald Sutherland and Jennifer O'Neill off.
Yeah,
the service.
Exactly.
It's going to be right there forever.
If anything, they might add a second version of it with different poster art. Maybe it'll be a nicer print. Maybe it'll be a worse one. I think they might have a half dozen versions of Dario Argento's Deep Red on there.
Yeah. Now, again, with the people's streaming service concept, you know, Prime and Netflix require your credit card information for billing purposes, but Tubi is literally free. Even if you create an account with Tubi or with Pluto TV, they don't want your credit card information. You know, I think forced commercials, a few per hour, is an incredibly small price to pay for access to a massive library.
They even have kind of a shitty algorithm. And I mean that in the best possible way, right? If you go to your recommendations, you probably could go through three pages without recognizing, hey, how does that connect to what I've already watched on Tubi? It doesn't follow you up. It doesn't just, again, it's not about serving you the latest thing that they have based on what you've seen already. It is sometimes just a mishmash and a hodgepodge. And that's the way I live my life. That's the way I want to cast a wide net when it comes to the things that I consume. And that it allows me to do that very easily. You discover that there's so much ephemera that even now, even in a time when everything feels picked over to death, there's just so much that is out there. One of the things that I've really dove into over the last year or so are made-for-TV movies from the 70s and 80s. So much, like, I just, on the most recent Tubi update that I was writing about, they added there was an early 80s High Noon sequel that was made for TV, written by Elmore Leonard. Starring Lee Majors and David Carradine. And it's just like, look, maybe there's probably a lot of people who lived through, I mean, I was pretty young when that came out, but lived through it and maybe have some memory of it. But that's just one of literally hundreds of movies, because the made-for-TV movie has evolved into something very different now, but it used to be a fairly big deal. Just like there were just added one called Poker Alice from 1987 with Elizabeth Taylor, Tom Skerritt, Susan Tyrell. If you're like me and love like character actors, weird supporting casts, some of these made for TV movies, they're just gold mines of really untouched material.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of white whales that I had always wanted to see that I found on Tubi. I've always wanted to see this TV movie starring Ben Gazzara called The Death of Richie.
Oh, right. I know exactly that one.
You know, and like, how else was I going to find it? And then one fine evening, I saw that it was on Tubi and I watched it. And, you know, like, hard to believe it was ever aired on television. It's just so grim. But, you know, Tubi is, it's that weird sort of democratization. It's like, whoever wants to give us, whoever wants to pay the licensing fee to let us add the movie to the service gets to do it. And you can find all sorts of like unsavory material as a result of this sort of open-ended policy. But then there are all these movies that would never be released in any other world beyond maybe YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a Halloween fan film showed up on Tubi at one point. You see, you know, I've talked to you at length about that. My background is in DIY, shot on video, cinema, right? Very much like making your backyard type material. But we're not joking when we say that there are films that literally are just people making them in their backyard, putting together some sometimes very rough poster art. And that is enough to get them on a service that is a little, again, more refined than just putting it on YouTube, where it feels more like a real movie, even if sometimes it could just barely be classified as that. And that's fine. Like you said, the democratization is about having that sitting beside a Hollywood blockbuster and literally on the same page. Hey, look, we know what people are like. 9 out of 10 of them are going to click on Total Recall instead. But then, you know what? Give the opportunity to someone who maybe put together a little, you know, some interesting ideas and some fun poster art, and maybe they can get that curious person to at least try it out.
This is a very important concept about, you know, inspiration of artists and inspiration of film lovers, is that services like commercial television, over the air, 24 hour a day channels, they would just put stuff on the air and people would see them or come across them and it might change their lives.
Yeah.
You know, and in the world of that we have now of streaming services where you have to make the decisions, you know, like it's like a virtual way of creating the video store. Like you and, you know, my whole life is about going into video stores, spending an hour in there and walking out with nothing. And I do that a lot with things like Tubi and Netflix. Like there was a joke The Onion did about the like Netflix to introduce new scrolling only option where you could just look at movies and not rent any of them.
I mean, Tubi is the gift to the endless scroller, right? Yeah. Because it can feel endless. And also because of the diversity, you're going to constantly see things that you haven't seen before. I mean, I think, yeah, for those of us who are very much into film and the history of film and the diversity of film, look, it's fun to scroll through Netflix. It's fun to scroll through more curated services like Criterion Channel. But boy, give me a list of things that I've never heard of and I'll be happy. I'll just keep scrolling. I'll never stop.
We need services that have all sorts of garbage. I think it's very important for a library to have more things that you're not interested in than things you're interested in, as opposed to things like Netflix that try to get you interested in everything. The whole point of a library is that 95% of it is of no interest to you.
One of the things I found from a lot of micro-budget filmmakers over the past couple of years or so is they all had work that was on Amazon Prime. That was their kind of location at that time. And then there was just a policy change and suddenly it all started disappearing because it wasn't popular enough. Like maybe they were only getting 10 views a month. And because Amazon, again, has a little bit more of a higher profile, they wanted to basically jettison all of their low-viewed material. And to me, it's like the low-viewed material, that is the key. That's what's going to keep me coming back because, I mean, there are, let's face it, there's a dozen ways for me to watch Major League if I wanted to watch it. But there's only one way to watch, you know, Don't Let the River Beast Get You.
Yeah, which is on Tubi.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Doug, to amuse you and the listeners, I want to go through my bookmarked wish list of Tubi movies that I want to watch. To give you an idea of the kind of trash that's here, the trash that's very important, that it exists. So here we go. I've bookmarked The Girl Hunters. It's a Mike Hammer movie where Mickey Spillane plays Mike Hammer.
That's right.
Which I've never seen. I watched an incredible movie called The Price of Power, which is an Italo-Western in a crap Telecine transfer, a movie that I had never heard of from 1969, which is an allegory for the Kennedy assassination. So it's a Western that takes place in the frontier town of Dallas, Texas. And it's a guy who's trying to prevent a plot to assassinate President James Garfield, who's played by Van Johnson. So he visits the town in a horse and carriage and he gets shot. and a Spanish actress who plays Garfield's wife is acting like Jackie Kennedy, like scrambling around. They basically reenacted the Zapruder film, and they arrest a guy for the murder who turns out to be a patsy. So, you know, not a good movie, but I would not have known that this movie existed if it weren't for Tubi. Like, it was a stunning visual experience. Have you ever heard of a movie called Shot from 1973?
No.
It's a low budget movie. The tagline is, "When survival is the name of the game, it's every cop for himself."
I mean, I'm on board already.
and the poster says that it's the first full-length motion picture produced at the University of Illinois. So this is like a feature-length student film from 1973. There's another from 73 called Cop Killers, which is a pair of hippies on their way to a cocaine deal who kill two cops at a roadblock and take off on a crime spree of robbery and murder.
The Cop Killers. They've got everything they need to make $100,000 overnight. A big load of cocaine.
All we gotta do is collect the money for that dope and we're gonna be rich men.
A big load of guns. And a big, beautiful hostage who's seen too much. General National Enterprises presents Cop Killers. Alex, a two-bit thug from Tucson, and he's the nice one. Ray, he's sweet. He's mean.
Shut up! And do exactly what I say.
He's deadly. Alex and Ray. Yesterday they were nothing but punks killing time. Today, they're killing cops.
Bruce Beresford, one of his first movies, Money Movers, is about an armored car company that keeps getting targeted for heists. Do you remember in the sort of the burgeoning days of the Australian New Wave, where all those great filmmakers were making, you know, The Cars That Ate Paris and
absolutely
all these like schlocky movies before they started making Breaker Morant and Picnic and Hanging Rock. They're making all these like crazy, trashy, almost like Canucksploitation, except an Australian version. Whereas
very much so,
Canada slipped into a permanent sort of tax shelter state, whereas the Australian film industry actually had their own real new wave that emerged from all that. So, you know, I bookmarked that. Here's a movie called The Salamander from 1981 with an all-star cast, including Franco Nero and Anthony Quinn, about a conspiracy that was uncovered that is aiming to restore a fascist government to Italy. Top of the Heap is on here, a great blaxploitation movie that was recently got a new restoration. And more often than not, the beautiful new restorations of movies that were in public domain are here on Tubi.
That's right.
The great Canadian-American thriller Russian Roulette with George Segal as an RCMP officer who has to stop an assassination of the Russian premier in Vancouver. Here's a fucked up one that I had never heard of until I discovered Tubi. Wiretapper from 1955. It's a noir that turns into a Christian propaganda film.
Amazing.
An electronics expert of weak moral character falls in with the mob, and just when things are looking bad for the guy, and it really does feel like a film noir, he comes across a Billy Graham rally and finds Jesus. This is the tagline. The true life drama of the man who kept the gangsters, the gamblers, and the bookies always one step ahead of the law until the moment when he tapped in on a direct line to God.
I'll tell you one thing about Tubi is that sometimes it feels like it's only one. All it would take would be one studio complaining about the fact that their movie is next to Cannibal Ferox or like a Christploitation movie like A Thief in the Night. And then it's just all going to fall apart, right? As soon as people realize what they're getting away with here, then it would all be done. But that's like that list that you're reading right now. It's so fascinating because I imagine most of the people listening, maybe they've heard of one of those movies or two of those movies. But even people who are very, very into the history of cinema and even obscure movies, they're going to find things there that they just have never heard of. I just on the most recent list that I put together, there was a Sean S. Cunningham, the director of Friday the 13th. He made a movie in the late 1970s, a Bad News Bears ripoff called Here Come the Tigers from 1978. Basically a straight ripoff of Bad News Bears, had no idea it even existed. There was a made-for-TV Humphrey Bogart biopic that just got added called Bogey with Kevin O'Connor playing Humphrey Bogart. Mm-hmm. These are things that, again, it's not that they are necessarily obscure. Sometimes these are movies that have big actors in them, right? Like, and at the time, maybe that they were they had a certain profile, but have just fallen out of fashion, maybe never got a wide release. I've used the term dumping ground a lot to describe the stuff that's on Tubi. But I mean that with all love and all, you know, positivity, because you need a place for these things to go, right? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise they just don't go anywhere. And that's some of the thing, you know, we've already kind of touched on the idea that we see services jettisoning content, movies, television shows, even stuff that they've produced themselves for a variety of reasons. But things need to go somewhere, right? And like you said as well, who knows what's going to catch fire? Who knows what people are going to rediscover and kind of, and you know, Columbo, look, 5 years ago, Columbo was just an old, I mean, I loved Columbo even 5 years ago, and there were lots of people who did, but in terms of it kind of reaching a new audience, reaching a new generation, maybe just kind of capturing people's attention, sometimes those shows like Columbo, The Rockford Files, other kind of 70s cop shows or 70s detective shows, they'll come through the cycle again, and who knows what else will come along with it. And you don't get the opportunity to discover those things if you don't have things to discover.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you're missing in the takeaway of curated programming and channels that just put stuff on. And one of the other great things about services like Tubi and Pluto TV is that they do have specialty channels on them. They have, like, Shout Factory has a channel. Mm-hmm. They also have an on-demand category. It's called Shout TV. Let me give you an example of some of the good stuff mm-hmm. you can find there. They have every episode of The Prisoner. They have every episode of Space 1999. They have 11 seasons of The Carol Burnett Show. They have Exorcist 3. They have packages of episodes of The Tonight Show. Dick Cavett was on Tubi for a while. Tubi also has great catalog material. They have about 10 Ken Loach movies. So you mm-hmm. can watch Kes. You can watch Hidden Agenda. You can watch Riff Raff, Lady Bird. They have the new one, the newish one called I, Daniel Blake. You can watch all sorts of incredible catalog material. Report to the Commissioner is there. Like, that's the perfect movie to stumble across at 2 a.m. on television, that cop thriller with Yaphet Kotto and Michael Moriarty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just sitting there on Tubi waiting for you to watch. Deadly boring, but at the same time, my kind of entertainment. you can watch At Close Range with Sean Penn and Christopher Walken. Like, that's perfect 2 a.m. on cable TV content, and it's just sitting there. They have Eyes Wide Shut on Tubi right now, along with Paths of Glory and The Killing and Room 237. If you want to go, down the Kubrick rabbit hole, during the pandemic, Tubi was carrying pretty much every Nick Broomfield documentary. So I caught up on a few that I had never seen, and I rewatched some favorites like Heidi Fleiss, Hollywood Madam. Sadly, they're not on the platform these days, but things cycle in and out. Whole filmmakers' libraries will cycle in and out sometimes.
They do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. If you do a search for Martin Scorsese right now, you find Goodfellas, which is available right now to watch on Tubi, The Last Waltz, and Boxcar Bertha. And to me, that's a really It's a really clear example of the kind of thing that you see maybe solely on Tubi, which is that those smaller films, right? Jonathan Demme's early movies, the ones that don't have as much profile, ones that don't, even outside of his Roger Corman films, like films that maybe they made for TV, films that Abel Ferreira made in the 1980s for TV, that's where they're going to pop up, right? Maybe you'll see a collection on something like Criterion Channel that's being specifically trying to capture a breadth of a career. But in terms of your average, like, you're never going to find that shit on Netflix. It's just, especially now, especially if it's before 1980, you're just never going to see it. There needs to be a place for it. And I'm glad that there is. And I'm glad that people seem to really enjoy seeing these lists of obscurity on these channels. But I also think that it's, when I put those lists together, I don't do the mainstream stuff. I don't put that on there because that's easy enough to find. But let's not get it twisted, right? I mean, After Yang just got added, The Farewell just got added, The Last Black Man in San Francisco just got added. They don't just have mainstream Hollywood schlock. They have, you know, high quality art films. They have, Godard is on there. Michael Mann is on there. The Hitchcock is on there. You can find a lot of really good refined stuff for your taste. We just happen to be a little more interested in the obscure garbage.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and I are the kinds of people who for entertainment would read the Leonard Maltin video guide and discover movies that way. Tubi is like a streaming service that is like the Leonard Maltin movie guide.
I'm almost failed university because our university library in Newfoundland had hardcover collections of New York Times movie reviews that I would just sit down and just read all day, every day. But yeah, Video Hound Guide, Leonard Maltin Guide, Roger Ebert Guide. It's how I spent a good part of my – when I was doing that, when I was reading that, and again, I understand, listeners, I'm a loser. I know what I am. I know what I'm all about. I was reading it just like when I was reading Rolling Stone or reading Rolling Stone collections of reviews. I was reading with the idea that, oh, I will never get to see this. These are things I will never get to hear this album. I'll never be able to. Or if I do, maybe I can pick one out of the 50 and really make an effort and try to track down that one thing and maybe I'll get to experience it. We live in a cursed age that also just happens to be a blessed age at the same time. Never has things really been worse than they are, while also giving us access to it's almost like it's been some sort of devil trade-off that we've made, right? Where it's, hey, you get to see that obscure Gary Coleman made-for-TV movie from the 1980s that you've always wanted to check out. You also need to support a horrific company that does horrible things and puts out propaganda into the world. And you also have to live in this world where they have all this power and influence at the same time.
Yeah. Well, this leads me to, you know, the common knock about Tubi. Even when I was promoting that I was doing a Tubi episode of this podcast, people were responding to me and saying, yeah, but they're owned by Fox News. And it's like, well, technically they're owned by the Fox Corporation. So yes, they, you know, Fox owns them. You're not actually giving them any direct money. The advertisers are. And not only that, but I don't detect, I mean, we'll get into this a little further when we talk about some of, more of the offerings on the channel, but mm-hmm. I don't get an ideological bent necessarily from Tubi. Like I don't feel that they're pushing right-wing material and hiding left-wing material. Like I can watch 10 different Ken Loach movies on Tubi right now. And I think that if they were trying to control your mind and make sure that it was all right-wing content, that you wouldn't be able to watch Hidden Agenda.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, there you can find the Dinesh D'Souza documentaries on there, but you can find all sorts of bizarre documentaries. I mean, you can find 50 Sasquatch documentaries on there as well, which, of course, don't necessarily have a political bent. But you're exactly right. And the advertising also doesn't seem to have a specific political bent that I have run into. I actually have seen more of that in some of the other services at times that cater a little more to having political advertising. That said, I have difficulty pushing back against someone who says, look, I don't want to support it, even though I know that the distance between my advertising, the money that I'm providing for them through advertising, the distance between that and Tucker Carlson or whoever getting paid is a pretty far distance. I just don't want my participation in that in any form. And you know what? That is your option. And I get that. I understand it. I sympathize with it. I also understand, as you do, as everyone does, that every streaming service of any note, of any of that has a significant catalog, is owned by horrible companies or some variation on horrible companies. Fox is just a very visible one, but I mean, Amazon is obviously the biggest other example of something like that. It's just hard when there are people doing this world harm that are in the mix for something like this. I also try to balance it out with that there are a lot of filmmakers who are getting their work seen, that are getting some money from having their work on the service, money that they wouldn't have otherwise. And that Tubi itself has been recently pumping money into, creating its own content. And some of that, like, it's hard to think of Fox News, if you're thinking of them as the ownership of Tubi, being the ones to create a Furry Freak Brothers cartoon show with John Goodman doing one of the voices on it.
Right, right. Of the many live TV channels that are streaming on Tubi, you can watch ABC News. You can watch NBC News. They have, their 24-hour News Now services. Sometimes you can even watch local affiliates' news coverage. You can also watch lots of Spanish channels. In fact, there's one specific channel on Tubi where you can watch the Spanish dub of Charlie Sheen's sitcom Anger Management for 24 hours a day if you want.
Like I said, a glorious and cursed age all at once.
Yeah. Speaking of, these gigantic catalogs that are around, I know you have been a faithful chronicler of the work of Eric Roberts. And if you're a Roberts head, I typed up his name in the search field and I found about 80 or 90 films with him in them. Some familiar titles are Runaway Train and The Pope of Greenwich Village, mostly all the garbage that he pumps out. Like, what does he make, 30 movies a year or something?
Sometimes more than that.
But unfortunately, they only carry one of the titles in the Stalked by My Doctor series.
It's funny because I was just posting about Stuck by My Doctor a little earlier today. That has actually cycled in and out too, the extended Stuck by My Doctor universe. Look, the obscurity was the point when we started the Eric Roberts podcast. It's called Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. We had the joke that we have made a blood oath to cover the life and career of Eric Roberts. We've had you on the show, Jesse. It was an opportunity for us to pick an actor who basically had a catalog, filmography that was so large that you would never run out of movies to cover on it. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, because he's still alive and because he is making 30 movies a year, it's actually become more ridiculous since we started the show, which we started like 7, 8, 9 years ago at this point. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It is a place. It's almost like the Eric Roberts streaming service. Sometimes I think of it as the Eric Roberts / Godfrey Ho ninja movie streaming service, just because you can put in that his name and just come up with when we say dozens, that's not an exaggeration. There are dozens of movies. And the fact that you don't get to Runaway Train or The Pope of Greenwich Village until like the 8th or 9th line is so funny to me. It's so funny that you get to Revelation Road, the Christian movie he made with the guy from The Walking Dead, or you know, one of 20 movies that basically just have an Eric Roberts appearance from they paid him $100 on Cameo, and that's he's kind of zoomed in to do his part in that. There's a person I found, Jesse, and this is a good enough time to mention this as any other. His name is Ken Del Vecchio. Have you ever heard of this guy before? He has a production company called, I think it's called Injustice for All Productions. And he is, I'm going to try not to get in trouble here, he is a piece of garbage. He is just a horrible human being. He has his own right-wing news website that occasionally is also an amateur wrestling news website. And most of the articles are about his own son. He made a movie a couple of years ago called A Karate Christmas Miracle. And it stars his son. And because this gentleman, Kendall Vecchio, is also a judge, or was a judge, and who's written some book on the law, all of his movies have these scenes where people talk about the law in extreme detail. In this particular one, his son bursts into a classroom and says, "That's not how the law works." He always works these right-wing themes into his films, including he's made some anti-choice horror movies, things like that. But what's notable about his films is that he recycles the material. So he released, I think, a movie with Robert Loggia 3 years ago, even though Robert Loggia's been dead for like a decade. He has Charles Durning show up in his movies all the time. But he made a movie called The Joker's Poltergeist. He produced it. The Joker's Poltergeist is a movie that was based on the shootings, the Dark Knight shooting that happened in the theater several years ago. This is a horror movie with this as the central idea. He had Martin Cove and Eric Roberts show up in it. He uses that footage in A Karate Christmas Miracle. Again, the same footage of these two actors, this horrible bad taste horror movie into this awful children's movie. It's beautiful. Even though it plays into exactly the political things we were just talking about, this is just the reality of low-budget filmmakers sometimes have a bunch of garbage that's out there. But that's on there, right? You can find Golden Shoes, the children's movie about a child, the kid of the director. This is separate from Ken Del Vecchio, who has a pair of magic shoes that allows him to be one of the greatest soccer players in the world. Eric Roberts shows up in that as well for a couple of scenes. It's beautiful and it's ugly. But it's very unique to Tubi that all of these things can sit side by side.
Well, here's an example of the sort of rabbit hole that awaits you at any given moment on Tubi. Mm-hmm. We all know the movie The Amityville Horror from 1979. But Doug, what happens if you type Amityville into the search engine on Tubi?
This might not be a complete revelation to some listeners that there's been a lot of Amityville movies, particularly over the last decade or so. I think there was just a realization, hey, we can just put Amityville as the title in our movie. No one can stop us. Currently, if you do a search for Amityville on Tubi, you will find none of these are made up. Amityville The Awakening, Amityville Scarecrow 2, Amityville Escape, Amityville 3D, that's one of the legitimate ones, Amityville Emmanuel, Amityville The Evil Escapes, Amityville Dollhouse, Amityville Clownhouse, Amityville Karen, Amityville in Space, Amityville,
Hold
It's
on,
About
wait,
Time.
Amityville Karen?
Yes, and it is about like a Karen. I don't know if she's possessed or not by Amityville. I think a lot of these probably are very distant away from a haunted house film. And many are probably titled after the fact. Amityville, It's About Time. The Amityville Moon, Amityville Poltergeist, of course, another Poltergeist, Amityville A New Generation, Amityville Hex, Amityville Witches, Amityville Christmas Vacation, yes, that's a real one, Amityville Toy Box, Amityville Island, that one is has a shark, so it's both a Jaws ripoff and an Amityville ripoff, Amityville Cop, Amityville Death House, Amityville The Final Chapter, My Amityville Horror, that one's a documentary, Ghosts of Amityville, Amityville Uprising, The Amityville Haunting, The Amityville Terror, The Amityville Curse, The Amityville Harvest, The Amityville Exorcism, Amityville Theater, and 1979's The Amityville Horror is also on Tubi. What a great example of how it all mixes. By the way, you do that search, The Amityville Horror might be the last one that shows up on the list. Yeah. That still is only probably 20% of the Amityville movies that have been released over the last 3 years alone. We have, I know there's an Amityville Outhouse made by a mutual friend of ours.
Yeah. And the other thing that I noticed while I was tooling around on Tubi is that, you know, we had HBO Max until a couple of days ago when they changed their name to Max. Max, the place where you can find HBO. I guess one of the reasons why the service changed its name is because David Zaslav is determined to blur the lines between reality television, non-scripted stuff, and cinema and movies and scripted stuff.
Right.
As they continue to devalue the work of writers. And as they continue to devalue the work of artists as well, as they got in trouble when Max launched and they had created a new category called content providers or what was the horrible word they used?
Yes, I know what you're talking about, where they basically have put all of the creative teams all on a single line with no distinction between anyone involved with the writing and the directing of it.
Yeah, so they'll so they call Martin Scorsese one of the creators of Goodfellas as opposed to the director, you know, and they immediately rolled it back because obviously there are lots of union guilds that fought very, very hard for those job titles to be associated with the work that people do. So, you know, they said, oh, we're very sorry, that was a mistake. But I think the mistake was you weren't supposed to get mad at us for doing it. You know, and they'll do it again. Anyway, so I was tooling around on Tubi and I discovered many of the titles that were HBO Max day and date exclusives in 2021, the year that they put their whole slate out on streaming on the same day as they did in theaters. Nearly all those movies are now on Tubi. Those Who Wish Me Dead with Angelina Jolie, Cry Macho, Judas and the Black Messiah. You can watch pretty much all the 2021 movies on Tubi for free right now. So these streaming services that are owned by corporations like HBO Max, you would think that they would have this material available to their subscribers because it's part of the Warner Brothers content library. But recently, Max has started offloading all this material of programming that cost them millions of dollars to make. Even programs like Westworld are no longer on Max. They are Lovecraft County is available to watch for free on Tubi now. That's only a two-year-old streaming series on HBO. So they've controlled all this catalog material, but I think it's starting to occur to major corporations that actually the money is to be made in licensing, not in necessarily subscriptions.
Yeah, and of course, there's an extension of the Disney Vault idea, the concept, right? I mean, we thought with the beginning of the Disney streaming service that was a thing of the past, that the idea of walling off your entire history, why start a Disney service unless you're just going to make your entire archive available and then create new material on top of that? But yeah, I mean, of course, the big one everyone's talking about in regards to the Disney streaming service are shows like Willow, which, you know, from this literally this year, you know, high budget show, one that got a lot of attention when it came out, and now just gone in a way that maybe it will appear on Tubi, but as of right now, not accessible at all. They have Hemlock Grove, the Eli Roth Netflix series, is on Tubi, and I think that's off of Netflix at this point. So it also seems kind of indiscriminate in terms of where this material is coming from. The thing is, you're unlikely to see Disney material, at least Disney original material, on Tubi at this point. But who knows? The future is a murky looking place.
Mm-hmm. But you feel for the creatives. You feel for all these people that that put all this energy, especially recent material, which was all done under the sort of duress of the pandemic and the conditions of labor while making this stuff. You know, and the idea that when you're a creator who's got a Disney project, this will be on the Disney Plus channel for for time immemorial. But yeah. It turns out that there's almost no patience from the major corporation that funded all this stuff. They don't just hold on to this stuff because they made it. They get rid of it because the ratings aren't good enough.
You know, there's been a lot of chatter recently about how Netflix, when they have been listing their most popular films recently outside of their original content, sometimes there are things that would completely baffle people, like that movie The Snowman, the Michael Fassbender movie, which was, you know, kind of notoriously a mess in terms of production and was a bit of a flop, was one of the most viewed movies on Netflix. And because some people discovered it, maybe they're enjoying rewatching it, maybe they go back to it again and again. But you can only discover something if it's available to discover. Maybe the Willow series was not very popular in terms of viewers, but maybe a year down the line, maybe something happens and people are checking it out and there's a new fire underneath it. And people, you know, there are opportunities to rediscover things. But the idea of taking this material off, not only does it remove the financial incentive that if someone was to rediscover it, it might be able to benefit some of the people involved with the making of it, but it also just like, it feels so cynical, just as cynical as the idea, you know, once we all realized that Netflix wouldn't make more than 2 seasons or 3 seasons of a TV show without just ending it because of the necessity to probably, you know, rework the agreements with the people involved and the contracts and the fact that it might cost them a little bit more. There's just so much, it feels very robotic. It feels very... it feels very much based on a spreadsheet as opposed to what is best, even for the channel, even based on what's best for the channel, but certainly not what's best for the people watching those channels.
And this comes back around to what's so wonderful about Tubi is that it's sort of where all the effluvia winds up. Like,
that's it.
Today's hot content is tomorrow's catalog material. And maybe all this stuff does have a future to show up on a service like Tubi. But again, that to me is what is so important about Tubi. The vast majority of what a library's holdings are of no interest to the individual, but collectively, it's very valuable. That's the danger of things like Disney Plus and Max, is that they're just going to jettison material that was made because it's not hitting supposed metrics. I don't think Tubi is at all concerned with that.
There's also, of course, that danger of losing things forever, right? I mean, that is a concern. We talk about the fact that Netflix doesn't hold on to, you know, doesn't have movies, like they have maybe a handful that were made before 1980. But when it comes to content that was made originally for digital platforms, once it's gone, I mean, there was no reason for people, I mean, even though it's not hard to find digital versions of Willow if you really need to look for it, but some of the maybe things with less profile, there's no reason for people necessarily to be backing them up. We heard some stories from showrunners just the last few days who said that when they went on the internal storage of some of these companies that they were working for, they didn't even have complete versions of some of the movies or television shows that they were part of. So it feels like there's such a lack of respect, not only for the creators, but the actual finished product, that someone might just lose something and it could just be gone forever, or maybe a form of that is gone forever. It's kind of this weird, odd place where we have, it's easier than ever to compile these things into these catalogs, but they want to do it less and less. And it's not, can't be server costs. It can't be, it just must be lack of will and also lack of wanting to maybe do like upkeep and continual payments for things like that. It makes Tubi more and more unique as the years go on because of the fact that that catalog seems to be growing and growing, as opposed to even if it was just shrinking on one end. It just seems like it's a place to, look, it's parking, right? It's parking things that have maybe a very niche interest to certain people. Maybe it's a documentary about the end of the world narrated by George Kennedy. But by God, if you have a George Kennedy podcast, it's nice to have a place for things like that.
Here's an intersection of the two things that we've been talking about. If you go to the documentary section of Tubi, it's not exactly curated. It seems to be more who is willing to have Tubi license their work. So you have lots of low rent documentaries that are more of the agitprop variety as opposed to actual documentary films. Like if they have a copy of Marjo, the great documentary about Marjo Gortner, they have 15 documentaries about Donald Trump. So you can watch Dinesh D'Souza's Trump Card on there, along with stuff with from both political views. Titles like You Gotta Love Trump, or I think that was one of them. Trump versus the Illuminati, or One Nation Under Trump, which, and the tagline is, can Trump beat the establishment and take Washington? Most of these films are from 2016. And then you also have anti-Trump ones like Unfit, The Psychology of Trump, or Trumpocalypse Now. Like, they're not valuable. You would think that they would remove all this stuff because it's not of any value anymore. But I think a lot of people like to hold on to their grievances, and these movies might be quite popular on Tubi because, you know, there's ideologically, they're on opposite ends of that spectrum. So in a way, things hanging around forever can actually extend arguments and grievances.
It also doesn't hide away that history too, right? I mean, you can kind of revisit things that otherwise would be, you can talk about what life was like in 2016, but it's a lot easier to show people, hey, it was so wild that you have literally a dozen different documentaries of varying quality, to say the very least, with all these different perspectives on them.
But if you look up COVID on a search on Tubi, you get a yield of these low-budget agitprop films, including The COVID Heist and The COVID Killer and Corona Zombies was one of the films. And so, you know, like, you know, the anti-Dr. Fauci kind of stuff. Like, it's unfortunate that this stuff is so easily accessible. I wish that the documentary offerings that Tubi had were actually curated more than just they'll pay the license fee, therefore we'll put it on the service. There's some irresponsible stuff that you can watch on Tubi.
There certainly is. Yeah, absolutely. And it, who knows who's looking at it? Who knows? Sometimes it seems like, and this is something that we haven't really gotten into yet, but the quality of categorization of this content on Tubi can be a little iffy sometimes. We've heard stories of, you know, DVD menus being visible on the beginning of tapes. Tracking issues with the VHS tape that they've been transferred from are sometimes visible. Mm-hmm. I don't know when it comes to some of this content if anyone has ever actually watched it from beginning to end. It might just be that it's transferred over, put up there, and who knows. We're talking about examples like COVID and Trump. It gets, you know, it gets weirder and more obscure than that. Who knows how much anti-Semitic stuff is on there? Who knows where it fits into some of that? Yeah, we don't want to pretend that all the content has been curated or even looked at. It's just that it's everything. And when you have everything, you also got a lot of really unpleasant garbage. It, in some ways, the fact that there isn't as much oversight is one of the reasons we like it so much. I do think that you're exactly right. The documentary section in particular is a wasteland. I mean, and even outside of the more dangerous stuff that we're talking about, there are literally hundreds of UFO documentaries, dozens and dozens of Bigfoot and Sasquatch documentaries, and different variations on those things as well. And I know that people, there must be some audience for that sort of material. And I don't want to discount that there are some enjoyment, I'm sure, in some of that material as well. But a lot of it just looks like, you know, the lowest tier garbage you could think of. And I'm someone who appreciates low tier garbage.
Yeah, well, in a way, I would prefer it if Tubi had more Mondo Kane style.
Mondo Kane is on Tubi, by the way. Faces of Death was on it up until just a couple of months ago.
The full version of Faces of Death?
Full version of the original Faces of Death, yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
That's one of the things that still blows my mind, not to get away from this topic entirely. But like the thing that differentiates the video store experience for something like Tubi is just the fact that you could go on and watch Cannibal Ferox and, you know, almost the entire filmography of Lucio Fulci or Dario Argento or something like that. You know, movies that are, when I was a teenager or in my early 20s, were thought of as dangerous. Battle Royale is on Tubi. You could watch it right now, right? I mean, and Martyrs is on fucking Tubi. It's just a place where it does feel like, again, this goes back to the oversight thing. It feels like maybe a group of people or maybe nobody at all is watching exactly what's on there. And maybe it's just one group complaining that could just end the whole thing entirely when they find out that their kid popped on a late 70s, early 80s Italian cannibal movie and saw things that they just shouldn't have seen.
Yeah, well, we have that snitch culture that's going on right now in the States, right? Where, you know, people are reporting or trying to get books banned from libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, for instance, I just looked on Tubi. I just typed up trans to see what my results would be. They're mostly the Transformers with Transylvania 65,000. Transmorphers. Do you know what Transmorphers is?
I do know what Transmorphers is. That is the Asylum mockbuster version of Transformers. Yeah, look, lots of Asylum stuff there as well. It's the stuff that, again, would have clogged your red box a few years back or, you know, the things that the creators of that low budget variation or ripoff of big budget movies. They're just moved over to Tubi at this point. That's right. That's kind of their bread and butter at this point.
So they would have snakes on a train and things like that. If you
wait 1 year and you type in the word cocaine, just imagine how many movies are going to come up.
If you scroll, so if you search for trans and you scroll down, eventually you start seeing, you know, documentaries that are sort of more, probably more even-handed, like something called Transgender Nation, something called Trans Military, Transsexual Stories, documentaries from a few years ago. Fortunately, right now, you can't find documentaries about the evil trans agenda and stuff like that on Tubi.
Right. But,
you know, obviously, I mean, the next few years, if people start making shit like that, it's going to wind up on Tubi.
Yeah, I worry. Like, they have a very wide LGBTQ plus category on Tubi, which really just has a massive variation, you know, including a lot of low budget queer based movies and television shows and things like that. Stuff that just wouldn't get a profile again. It wouldn't show up on Disney Plus. It wouldn't show up on Netflix. Some of them maybe aren't refined enough, or maybe they're a little bit more intense for those kind of places. That can be found on there, but you worry that you'll go to that category and might find some of those terrible, you know, anti-trans documentaries. Mm-hmm. As of right now, if you want, you can find that shit on YouTube easily enough. But I mean, at least it suggests some level of categorization, even if it's just for now.
Yeah. On the other hand, if you go over to type up Oscar Michaud on Tubi, there's about six of his films there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that Tubi has over almost any other streaming service is tons of movies from before 1980. There are lots of films from the 30s and 40s on Tubi, for instance. They might not be in terrific quality, but they're there.
I'll tell you, if they're in the public domain, they're definitely on Tubi. My initial interest in writing about film before I got into podcasting about micro-budget movies was writing about low-budget movies, and a lot of that came from those box sets that used to be available through Mill Creek and things like that. You know, those box sets of 100 public domain movies or 100 ultra-low-budget movies. They would buy packages of these things, and almost all of them are on Tubi. It's a one-stop shop for that sort of stuff. And again, I found that they were worthy of discussion and investigation back then. And there really is still so much that you could find and unearth and discover and tell people about. And that's part of what I try to do with my threads. It's not saying, look, Tubi is the greatest streaming service on earth. Like you said, some of the prints are terrible. Sometimes you'll find VHS transfers that look like total garbage. Yeah. If you go into that Kung Fu section, you're going to find some almost unwatchable stuff just from the transfers that they have. But my God, you can just watch it right now. You'll be able to – there's no harm in clicking and finding out what it's all about.
I have a fondness for being able to watch movies in crappy public domain transfers.
Yeah, me too, actually. I always think of it as a fault in myself where I'll toss on Carnival of Souls for the 1,000th time in a version that you can barely watch. And it just – yeah, look, everyone has their own comfort blanket type movies and versions of movies. I think that a lot of the boutique labels have started to, you know, they've started to look a little deeper in regards to the material that's out there because they realize that obscurity is something that people will pay extra for. And you see some of those labels, again, they get reflected on there in terms of that's where they'll end up in the long run, some of their versions. But you can be that person. You can be that person doing that searching and finding those gems yourself. Because I would love to see the Tubi numbers sometimes. I bet that there are movies that have been there for 4 years that a half dozen people have ever seen. Some of the things that I usually mention when it comes to the listing of recent additions to Tubi in my Twitter threads would be like, you know, no one's ever reviewed this on Letterboxd. Nobody.
Yeah.
So why don't you be the first? Take a look, see what it's all about and tell us, look, it's going to be awful. I'm just going to be honest with you. It's probably not going to be very good, but someone needs to do that work. Someone needs to be able to say what these movies are about, say how they connect to the history of film, and whether it be the category of martial arts films, whether it be the category of lucha libre movies, whether it be the category of, you know, sword and sandal movies. There are people who are interested in that material more than just on a surface and want people who are willing to dig into the weeds. And this is a endless opportunity to live in those weeds.
Don't Let the River Beast Get You is available on Tubi. I typed up Captain Alex on Tubi to see whether or not what Hollywood films were there. Who Killed Captain Alex is here. And right next to it in the search results is Captain Ron with Martin Short and Kurt Russell. There's a metaphor. you have to do some work to really enjoy the fruits of Tubi's offerings. And you are about as good a trawler of the catalog as anyone. What's your secret? How do you find out what's on Tubi?
The methods have had to change and evolve because Tubi is making it harder to see what they've added to their platform. It used to be that if you went to the recently added on specifically on certain apps, specifically I'm thinking of the Fire TV app, it would give you a pretty comprehensive list of what had been added. And so as long as you went to it several times a month, you could go and add it to your own list, and you'd have sort of like, that's the way that I would catalog it. These days I have to go to sites like Just Watch It, which have sometimes a fairly inaccurate version of what has been recently added, to go through that and kind of test out the links, make sure that what they're saying is there is actually there. It's a little bit more work, but it's also something that you have to do more often because the way that that particular website works is that after a month, it's just gone. There's no archive of what has been recently added. So you have to be checking back. It does keep me honest. It keeps me focused on going back to it and saying, hey, this is what's been added over the past 2 weeks. This is what's happened in March or April or May. Now, this is just, you know, it's just my enthusiasm for it because I'm also curious, right? I'm also curious about what's there. You know, I'm just looking at my most recent list, right, where you put – like there's a kids movie from a few years back called Cool Cat Saves the Kids, which is this weird right-wing kids thing where a guy is dressed up as a big cat, has appearances by Eric Roberts, of course, but also some other familiar faces like Vivica A. Fox, because they've been conned into helping what was supposed to be a kids informational thing. But then there's I think one of the sequels is about gun safety, which of course is just about how everyone should own a gun. Lars von Trier's Antichrist just got added. Shinya Tsukamoto's Nightmare Detector from 2007, made-for-TV adaptation of Tennessee Williams' Sweet Bird of Youth with Elizabeth Taylor, the 1991's Whatever Happened to Baby Jane remake with Vanessa and Lynn Redgrave. I mean, Abel Ferrara, I mentioned before, his movie The Gladiator from 1986, the 2000 film family film The Million Dollar Kid with Richard Thomas, Maureen McCormick, C. Thomas Howell, Corey Feldman, Estelle Getty, Randy Travis, and Clint Howard. I mean, how could you not want to watch that with that cast? That's the kind of thing that I'm most interested in, is like, I've never heard of that. What is it? I do the smallest bit of research because I want to know whether there is that. Sometimes it's just like, oh, it's a TV movie about, you know, spousal abuse from 1991, which is not to say that it's not a worthy subject matter, but it's just like something tossed off by NBC and maybe it has one familiar face. But sometimes you dive into those supporting casts and it's like, hey, it's the first time that, you know, Jeff Bridges did a TV movie or something like that. And it's a lot more interesting kind of to bring to people's attention. The I said before, you know, you can live in the weeds in regards to it. And you mentioned you have to search around a little bit. It does require a little poking around, even when it comes from, to me, trying to find what's newly available on it. But it's fun. You know, we love the history of this sort of thing. We love the history of movies and television. We love to see how they all connect together. Those interconnections are what fueled my interest in podcasting about subjects like Carol Kane and Steve Buscemi and Paul Bartel and Alejandro Jodorowsky over at Cinema Smorgasbord. It's the connections between their careers, how they led to other people. When I was growing up in Newfoundland, I had no access to anything. Like I was saying before, I'd read those guides about movies I'd never see. I'd read, you know, lists of albums that I'd never be able to hear. And I think I have a deeper appreciation for the fact that this accessibility is there than I would have had if I hadn't grew up like that. But it also made me all the more reliant on the idea that if I was listening to The Who and I found out that The Clash opened for them and their farewell tour in 1982, it's like, okay, so this band that I like, they like this band. And that band did a song with this band. And there were connections like that. The way that you find new things to enjoy isn't just what Netflix puts in front of your face. It's seeing who the people that you have a lot of appreciation for their art, who they collaborate with, and how those things kind of stretch out into the world. You know, you can't have a full appreciation of Martin Scorsese's career unless you also watch his documentaries, right? Unless you also watch his short films or the other people that he worked with at the Corman School and what they went on to do. It's such a deep ocean of material, and you can't fully appreciate it until you see the bottom, right? The vast, dark, murky bottom of that ocean. And Tubi is maybe the widest of those oceans.
before we go, we should also mention that the other main competitor to Tubi in terms of like a giant catalog and lots of fun access to free stuff is Pluto TV.
Mm-hmm.
They don't carry as much of the garbage. They have more studio works and they have a very, very big catalog. They're less likely to grab a rip of Fear City by Abel Ferrara with the DVD menu included at the beginning. It looks a little more legit how they got things. And Pluto TV is a little bit better than Tubi in terms of the programmed channels that they carry. They've got lots of really good movie channels. For instance, this morning's offerings on their various channels were Frankenheimer's Manchurian Candidate, Pulp Fiction, mm-hmm. The Molly Maguires with Richard Harris, Support Your Local Sheriff with James Garner. You could have watched The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, The Big Boss with Bruce Lee and a very nice transfer this morning.
Mm-hmm.
They also have channels where you can catch up to Showtime programming like Yellow Jackets. There's a Walking Dead channel. There are several CSI channels. And they have some really great television programs that are just streaming on Pluto anytime you want to watch them. They have every episode of Peep Show. They have the original Hawaii Five-0. Mm-hmm. They have the original Twilight Zone. They have a whole Beverly Hills 90210 channel. You can watch all 500 seasons of the Canadian drama Heartland if you want. The most boring show ever created. Have you ever watched an episode of Heartland, Doug?
I certainly knew. It's one of those shows where you find out, hey, what's that? And then you find out it's on its fourth season. It's just like, well, I guess I'm paying for it. So
it's on its like 13th season.
Hey, look, what can I say? You know, I'm like I said, I'm from the East Coast. If they can keep this hour as 22 minutes on for its 20th season, I can't complain that much. But it's like I've spent a lot of time on Pluto. It's gotten a lot better in Canada over the last – I think it only kind of had an official launch a couple of years ago. But, you know, they have their Doctor Who channel. They have their Mystery Science Theater 3000 channel. They have lots of sports channels on it that play a lot of interesting material, music documentaries, et cetera, et cetera. You're right. As a place where you can experience these things in a similar way to cable television in the 1990s, where you might just, you know, come upon something and sit down and maybe watch 20 minutes of it and get sucked in, the mean quality is much higher, while still giving you that kind of sense of exploration that you get from something like Tubi. There's also variations on that. There's the Plex service, the one that allows you that has a built-in set of TV channels as well as a huge catalog of movies as well. I think a lot of that is echoed in Pluto TV. I think when you watch Pluto, you get a sense that there is a sense of curation behind it, that there maybe are people who are specifically programming, and the fact that they're more, the channels are more specifically themed towards, specific interests, make it a little bit more palatable. But maybe, you know, some days I wake up, I want things that are more palatable. Maybe I want to watch 20 episodes of Beverly Hills 90210 in a row. And sometimes I just want to go to the buffet, have a little taste of everything. During the pandemic, one of the things that became very popular were episodes of the old Bob Ross, The Joy of Painting show from PBS, right?
Yeah.
And there's a Twitch stream that is just episodes of that play constantly. And it feels like that comes from a similar place to what people are enjoying with Pluto, right? Where it's just like, you know, I know people who put on the Pluto Doctor Who channel or Mr. Science Theater channel, and they go to sleep to it every single night because it's just always on, always constant. But you see variations of that popping up. There's a channel on Twitch that just plays ALF content, like licensed, real, legitimate. So you get to watch, if you're really into ALF for whatever reason, you can enjoy the entire ALF universe on that ALF station. By the way, the ALF talk show from the late 90s also featured Eric Roberts in a memorable appearance.
The main difference right now between Twitter and the new upstart Blue Sky, I'm on both, is that on Blue Sky, people love making ALF jokes. They don't make nearly as much on Twitter as they do on Blue Sky.
Well, I mean, now I feel both ahead of the curve and behind it. I've not yet migrated to Blue Sky. I'm ready for things to entirely blow up on Twitter before I you know, just as Elon is going to escape from a desiccated and destroyed Earth onto Mars or whatever, Blue Sky will be my Mars. It'll be where I go to once things finally fall apart.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a real Valhalla feeling. Like you suddenly see these people you thought were dead, you know, because they deleted their accounts on Twitter, but now they're alive again on Blue Sky.
Now, I'm the guy in the middle of the hurricane where the news camera, you know, the cameras that come out, I'm like, I'm afraid of no roller coaster. I'm that guy, right? Yeah. Where it's like, sir, your house is going to blow down. It's like, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Make the fucking hurricane move. I was here first.
Doug, before we go, where can people find you on social media? And can you tell my listeners a little bit about all the things you're doing right now?
Sure.
You're absolutely a machine. You're a huge influence on me as a podcaster, Doug.
The influence was, hey, you should, if you have interest, you should absolutely start your own podcast, even if, like me, you have no hope of anyone ever listening to it. I started off with Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man, a podcast devoted to the life and work of actor Eric Roberts, where me and Liam O'Donnell made a blood oath to cover his entire career. That still continues in a form on Cinema Smorgasbord, which you can find at cinemasmorgasbord.com or on Twitter at cinemasmorg, S-M-O-R-G. We went from just covering the career of Eric Roberts to now having shows, individual shows that trace the career of Jackie Chan chronologically, Carol Kane chronologically, Paul Bartel, Alejandro Jodorowsky. We have a show devoted to Eurocrime. We have a show devoted to the Filipino actor Vic Diaz. It's all over there, including a show devoted to the wonderful Dick Miller over at cinemasmorgasbord.com. And you can subscribe on all of your podcast providers of choice. And why don't you leave us a review as well? If you just want to follow me and maybe check out my Tubi threads, they're over on Twitter at Doug_Tilley. That's T-I-L-L-E-Y. You can find it under the hashtag to be or not to be, spelled in that clever way. But however, that has also been taken over by all sorts of people. So if you do a search for my name and that hashtag to be or not to be, you can find the recent threads. I'm going to keep them up as long as people enjoy them.
And I also appeared on the Dick Miller podcast that you did. We talked about Get Crazy by Alan Arkush.
Yes, a wonderful episode.
That was fun.
And it was a good opportunity. You know, I think that was in some ways one of the things that inspired the launch of our Paul Bartel show as well. It was a real mixture at that time of obviously I have a lot of love for that Corman era of the 70s and 80s and all the people that came from it. We get into the weeds with that. But frankly, a lot of the shows that we have at Cinema Smorgasbord are just an excuse to have wonderful guests like yourself, really interesting people who have interesting perspectives on the work that we're talking about. It's always a joy, and it's always a great opportunity to talk to you.
Yes, Doug, please come back anytime. Let's talk about one movie next time instead of 300 mentions of movies.
Let's talk about that Eagles documentary.
You know, I could do a whole second episode about that. It's true.
when you said on social media that you were going to be doing that, I could not have been more excited. I'm like, that this is not only in Jesse's wheelhouse and my wheelhouse simultaneously. It just feels like there's a million things that you could still say about it. I listened to your entire episode, and afterwards I was like, I love that. I wish it was about 10 times as long. The opposite feeling I had in the third hour of the Eagles documentary itself.
Well, I have a rule that I try to respect, which is that no episode about a movie can be longer than the movie.
It's the most sensible rule possible that I have broken about 17,000 times.
Before we go, just a reminder that we do have a Patreon, and patrons get access to about 30% of the catalog of Junk Filter. To become a patron and to support the show directly, please go to patreon.com/junkfilter. And please follow us on Twitter at junkfilterpod. Coming soon to the podcast, a summer sidebar series on the TV show Miami Vice. The original music for this program was provided by Marker Starling. My name is Jesse Hawken. Thank you for listening.